I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the U.S. tax system is working great for the ultra-wealthy, and for wage earners, not so much. That's according to Ray Madoff, the author of the new book, The Second Estate, How the Tax Code Made an American Aristocracy. While the wealthy avoid taxation, working Americans face a heavy double-taxed burden from both income and hidden payroll taxes. This reality is obscured by misleading statistics and right-wing talking points that claim the wealthy are already overtaxed. But Madoff says the ultra-wealthy have managed to legally remove themselves from the tax system entirely. This has transformed the tax code into a tool to grow massive wealth, which is then being used to fundamentally change America. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
A big thank you to Tracy Humberg for donating a 2004-150 to Texas Public Radio. Fall is here, and so is the opportunity to make a difference. Consider donating your unwanted vehicle to TPR. It's free, and your gift might be tax-deductible. Visit tpr.careasy.org to get started.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the United States, the gap between the super rich and everyone else has never been wider. The top 1% of Americans now control more wealth than the bottom 90% combined, a concentration of power and privilege that continues to grow with every tax season. For most working families, taxes are a burden that eat into every paycheck. But for the ultra-wealthy, the tax code has become a toolkit for avoiding those same obligations through things like stock options, trust foundations, and loopholes written into the law tailored specifically for the super rich. So what was once a system designed to ensure fairness and shared responsibility for paying for our government has evolved into one that rewards inherited wealth and punishes hardworking families. Today, we're talking about how the American tax system has helped create a modern aristocracy and what can be done about that to make it fair again. This imbalance is not just about money, but it is about democracy and the nature of our nation itself. Ray Madoff is a professor at Boston College Law School, author of the new book, The Second Estate, How the Tax Code Made an American Aristocracy. And Ray, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much. It's a real pleasure for me to be here.
Well, let me ask you first off, because when we start talking about the tax code, people immediately hit cognitive overload. We don't even have to go into the details. It's like, oh, tax code, you know, they kind of, you know, glitch out. It's like, I can't even handle that. Don't even talk to me about that. But your book is written in plain language. It's a, you know, a slim book. It's not a big tome, like you would think, like the tax code, which is like, what, 40,000 pages now or something.
Right.
So it's manageable. We can manage this. We can talk about this in a way that is not glitchy, right?
Absolutely. And that is actually the whole goal of the book. The thing about taxes is they affect Americans more than pretty much any area of policy. It affects how much revenue the country gets to do all the things we need the country to do. It affects how much we have to borrow. And in particular, it affects each one of us because taxes set back our ability to use our money as we might otherwise want to do. And so whether the burden of taxes is allocated fairly is a really fundamental concern for all Americans. But Americans have been led to believe that there's no point in looking at taxes because the rich will always game the system, or it's too boring, or there's no problem there. These are three myths that we'll undo. And so those are all designed to keep Americans from looking at a system that is truly unfair for most of the country.
When you're talking about the ultra-rich, this American aristocracy, We have some names people will recognize. They become household names. Elon Musk, Bezos, Zuckerberg, these names like that, right?
Yep.
And so they must bring home really big fat paychecks, right?
You would think. Take Warren Buffett, for example. Warren Buffett is the greatest stock picker of all time. And yet, over the course of his career, he never took home a salary that was larger than $100,000. And that included salary and bonus. A pretty modest salary for someone with his capacity to pick stock. And Jeff Bezos, the president of Amazon, his salary has been held at $80,000, a salary that's so low that it has enabled him to claim the child care tax credit, which he has done. And then, of course, Bezos and Buffett, those seem to be taking huge salaries in comparison to some of our other centibillionaires who limit their salary to $1 a year. And actually, in 1 year, Elon Musk earned so little, he earned less than $1 a year, that California went after Tesla for fair wage violations.
Because he was being underpaid?
Yes, he was being
coming
underpaid.
To his defense. All right, so I'm going to play a clip here. This is Elon Musk talking about how much taxes that he paid in one particular year. And you come back on the other side and tell me, what did I just hear? Let's give a listen.
I'm the largest individual taxpayer in history. So I paid $10 billion in tax, over $10 billion in tax. You're welcome. Like, I sort of thought maybe the IRS would, like, you know, send me like a little trophy or something, you know? Yeah, like one of those, like, doesn't have to be expensive. It could be like, you know, one of those like things you get for when kids win a karate competition. Like little plastic gold trophy or something like that, or a cookie or something, but I didn't get anything. It's like, you know, but I was happy to pay the taxes. I don't mind. I'm the largest individual taxpayer in history. So,
yeah. So Elon Musk is saying that he paid a lot of taxes.
So it's quite possible that Elon Musk has had a year where he has, in fact, paid high taxes. So he has not always, he's in a way different from some others because he has gotten these very large stock bonuses issued by his company. And some of them have been worth as much as $1 trillion. And so because of that, he has paid some tax on the initial value of some of those stock options that he has received. But he has also been able to avoid much, much more in taxes because what he has not paid any taxes on is the enormous growth in value of his stock.
So the numbers are just, you know, astonishing, and he can frame it in a way that makes it seem like, wow, this guy's really paying his taxes.
Yes, he's... Right. And I would question whether these are the types of taxes he's paying every year, or this is the type of tax that he paid in one of these off years when he was given one of his extraordinary payments.
And then we could also say, look how many federal dollars you have received to prop up your companies along the years, which, you know, it's been a bargain for you. But, you know, this falls into this, and we're going to talk about this in a bit, a little bit more detail. But, you know, we keep hearing that that the rich are overtaxed; they're not undertaxed.
Yes. Yeah, so, and I think that this is a really important issue for us to discuss early on because I call this the statistic that saves the rich from taxes. And you might be referring to a statistic. Every time proposals are put forth that about raising taxes on the wealthy, the Wall Street Journal and other papers like that run an editorial called "We Are Already Soaking the Rich," and what they put forth are the following statistic about the income taxes, and so in 2024. The top 1% of earners paid 40% of the income taxes. Okay, so in 2024, the top 1% of earners paid 40% of income taxes, and 40% of the taxpayers paid no income taxes at all. And this statistic makes it seem like the rich are already carrying the lion's share of the burden, and huge, almost half the country are a bunch of freeloaders. And but when we look at this statistic a little bit more closely, we realize that that is a complete distortion of reality.
Right. And so I'm going to hit this break. And when I come back, I want you to break that down for me. How is that a distortion of reality, and why we need to really understand what's going on there? Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin. Davies with me on the line, Ray Madoff. Her book is The Second Estate, How the Tax Code Made an American Aristocracy. We're digging into the tax code. Don't worry, it's not that complicated. We can handle it. And about how it's tilted, how it's rigged, how it's there to really help the ultra-wealthy hang on to and grow their wealth. And that is shifting the burden of the taxes onto people like you and me. How is that fair? And how is that really creating America, the America that we really don't want? But right now, let's get back to where we left off. Ray, you had this statement. We hear it all the time. It's something that I think that right-wing talk show hosts have this tattooed to the inside of their eyelids. They say it all the time, that 40%, that the top 1% of the people in the economy, they're paying what? What's the
40% of the income taxes, and 40% of Americans pay no income taxes at all.
Well, that sounds really unfair. You know, we can't have that. So what are they?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
right.
So dig into it.
Absolutely. And it also makes it seem like you don't have to worry about understanding the tax code because we know how fair it already is. Okay, so here is why these numbers are misleading. This when they say the top 1%, they are talking about the taxpayers that have the most taxable income. So those with the most taxable income, right? High income earners, lawyers, doctors, finance people, high income earners are paying most of the country's taxes. However, this is a completely different case for high wealth owners, people like Zuckerberg and Bezos and Buffett and Gates and Larry Ellison and on and on with our wealthiest Americans, because those Americans can avoid income altogether, and that is because they avoid salaries, as we talked about before, and because their investments and inheritances are not subject to income tax. And what this means is that the people, the richest Americans, are just as likely to be in the 40% of non-payers as they are in the top 1% of payers. So Elon Musk might have had a year or two when he was in the top 1% of payers, but for most of his time, he doesn't have to be there at all because he doesn't need to have taxable income because they avoid salaries and they can avoid taxes on their investments and inheritances.
But there, so people who are making $10, $15, $20 million a year, you know, the people that the Mars, the Kochs, and the Waltons would call the riffraff, they're still rich, but they're not ultra rich, and they're paying taxes, those folks. And
so high-income earners, absolutely. High-income earners are paying the taxes. But I think that there's been some confusion. They think that their interests are aligned with the rich when they are really much more aligned with regular working class Americans who are also paying a lot of taxes. The other thing that makes that statistic highly misleading, so we often hear, you might remember back when Mitt Romney was caught on a hot mic saying that 47% of Americans were takers and not makers because they didn't pay income taxes.
Sure. He was speaking at a closed event to his donors, yet there was a bartender who was recording it on his phone. And then it got sent to Mother Jones, and it became a big deal.
Yes, exactly. The thing about that statistic that makes it so misleading is that it doesn't account for the fact that much of that 40% of people that don't pay income taxes pay significant payroll taxes. And payroll taxes are very burdensome and regressive. They are, for somebody who is self-employed, they pay 15.3% in taxes, and it starts at $1. So it's not like the income tax where the first dollars you earn are exempt. And it's not only that, it can't be offset by anything. It can't be offset by charitable deductions or anything. So payroll taxes are quite significant. And that is why somebody who earns $60,000 a year this year will still pay almost $14,000 in taxes. And that's a lot of money for someone trying to get by on $60,000 a year. Most of that is our payroll taxes, and they are quite burdensome.
I want to play another clip for you. This is from Warren Buffett talking about the tax system. Let's give a listen.
The government wants to take a greater share of your income or mine or Berkshire's, they can do it. And they may decide that someday they don't want the fiscal deficit to be this large because that has some important consequences, and they may not want to decrease spending a lot, and they may decide they'll take a larger percentage of what we earn, and we'll pay it. And we always hope at Berkshire to pay substantial federal income taxes. We think it's appropriate that a country that's been as generous to our owners, it's been the place. I was lucky. Berkshire was lucky. Was here, and if we send in a check like we did last year, we send in over $5 billion to the U.S. federal government. And if 800 other companies had done the same thing, no other person in the United States would have had to pay a dime of federal taxes, whether income taxes.
So Warren Buffett, he's talking about Berkshire corporate taxes, not talking about his own personal taxes.
Right.
He has said previously that it's unfair that his secretary is paying taxes at a higher rate than he is paying, but you know, help break down what we just heard there.
Right. So that's about corporate taxes, and corporate taxes raises it's a lot of other issues are raised by corporate taxes. And one thing that we don't know is to what extent corporate taxes are borne by shareholders, and to what extent corporate taxes are borne by other people in the system, like employees who may get paid less when there are large corporate taxes, or consumers who may have to pay higher prices. So this issue about what corporate taxes should be, there's a lot of diverse views about corporate taxes and what they should be, because it's not exactly clear where the burden falls of corporate taxes.
Well, when you're saying that if other companies did what he was doing, Berkshire was doing, that no one else would have to pay taxes. I mean, that sounds pretty cool. Is that true?
Well, I mean, I don't know what his numbers were. I mean, I can tell you that in 2024, the government took in a total of $5 trillion in revenue. And then we spent about $2 trillion more. So we were short by about $2 trillion. And he said he paid. So I don't know if I can do the math about about whether they could have covered all $7 trillion.
They paid $5 billion. And that's, you know, that's another problem we have here.
The
differences between a million, a billion, and a trillion, you know.
Exactly.
These numbers rhyme, but they're really not close.
They are so not close at all. And that's one of the, that's another area of confusion, because million, billion, and trillion all sound very similar. And millionaire has traditionally been the phrase that we have used to refer to rich people. However, today in 2024, depending on what part of the country you live, having $1 million, it hardly makes somebody rich at all. Housing is very expensive. College is very expensive. If you have multiple kids, these are things that we consider as kind of basics of a middle class existence. What we aspire for everyone to be able to do, to have a home of their own, to send their kids to college, and $1 million won't get you anywhere near there. One of the things I talk about in the book is about this confusion between a million and a billion. And one way to think about it is that if you try to live off of the income, somebody invested the money and they wanted to live off of the income, at let's say at a modest 3% rate, $1 million would produce $30,000 of income a year. That's hardly going to support a lavish lifestyle. $30,000 a year, that's a very small amount of income for somebody to who we would think of as a millionaire. On the other hand, if somebody had $1 billion and they invested at 3%, that produces $30 million a year. And $30 million a year can support a pretty good lifestyle. So the difference between a million and a billion is enormous.
So back to the point about, so last year, 2024, the federal government took in $5 trillion, yet it spent almost $7 trillion, had to borrow $2 trillion to make up for it. And so these are huge numbers. And looking at the wealth of the wealth holders in America, how does that compare?
Yeah. Yes. So that's really the incredible thing, right? So we often hear people will say, it doesn't matter if we tax the rich because they simply don't have enough money to make the difference to close the gap. And so I was interested in seeing what that number was, right? So we took in $5 trillion, as I say, from all sources, income tax, payroll taxes, excise taxes, estate and gift taxes, and spent $7 trillion. And at the same time, the wealth of the richest 1% of Americans was $50 trillion. $50 trillion. And so when people say it doesn't matter if this group that's controlling $50 trillion pays taxes, because they can't possibly make up that $2 trillion shortfall, that just strikes me as, just highly implausible. And the problem is that people say, well, sure, but how much taxable income did they have, or how much income did they have? And the answer is, we don't know, because a lot of their income isn't reported in our tax system.
So they don't have W-2s.
If they don't have W-2s, then they don't have the same reporting that goes on. So when they're, Zuckerberg's stock goes up by $60 billion, as it did in 2024, that doesn't show up anywhere. And when the Mars family, inherits many billions of dollars, as they have been over the years, that doesn't show up anywhere because inheritances, gifts, and life insurance are completely excluded from the definition of income. So we don't even report it. So we don't have that information.
And this is by design. They're not doing anything illegal. This is the way the tax code has been tailored to the ultra wealthy.
Well, yes. Although for a long time, it was tailored to actually extract more taxes from the ultra wealthy. What's interesting is that the system was put in place in the early part of the 20th century. So the modern income tax came about in 1913, the modern estate tax in 1916, and it changed a little bit over the years. But basically, those are the same system that we have in place today. We have a progressive income tax and an additional estate tax, right? Rates have come down, but the two systems are both in place. But what has happened is that wealthy Americans have learned how to avoid taxable income. And then beginning in the 1990s, they had a quiet destruction of the estate tax. And so the income tax system was always intended to be have a backup of the estate tax system. But the estate tax system is no longer providing the backup that it once did.
All right, so we're going to talk about that some more. We're going to get some callers in the conversation. Sean, I'll get you on the air when we come back from this break. And our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What do you think about the tax system? Do you think it is rigged? It's unfair? Or do you think the wealthy are they're paying their fair share? What are your concerns about how this is impacting the middle class, the working class? There's a burden. These bills have got to get paid by the government sooner or later, and who's going to pay it? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the new book, The Second Estate, How the Tax Code Made an American Aristocracy. We're joined by the author, Ray Madoff. Madoff's book raises fundamental questions about fairness and taxation in America, who pays, but who doesn't have to pay, and in our democracy built on equality before the law. It's not just a tax issue, it's a test of what kind of nation we want to be. If you've got a question or comment, call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Sean, and Sean, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is absolutely fascinating, this discussion. I thought I was an educated person and knew what was going on. Whenever I hear someone like Bernie Sanders here talking about, you know, changing the tax code, my mind immediately just goes to income tax. I had never even conceptualized the way that you have wealth that's just hitting in all these other ways with stocks and other stuff. And so even somebody like Bernie Sanders, who says we need to tax the rich or tax wealth, I don't think people's mind goes there at all. And so there seems to be a huge framing problem where we say change the tax code, but people don't even think, oh, you can change the tax code and not even touch income tax and have a huge change, a huge impact on the way that inequality is or the income is being redistributed around our nation. And so I think the question that needs to be answered is, what is the right frame? How do you make this and turn this into MAGA? Make America great again, and people instantly knew what that was, or at least had an idea. And there doesn't seem to be any way, or at least no uncomplicated way to make it, I'm going to tax this wealth, and I don't even have to touch your income tax.
Huh. Sean, thank you for that. Appreciate your calling in. Ray Madoff, your response.
Thank you so much, Sean. That's a great question. And I totally agree. I think that we do need to clarify the system. I think that there's two different things. There's one, the proposal of Bernie Sanders, the wealth tax, I think that does try to get at the problem by having an additional tax on the wealthy. The problem is, with that framing, is that because people believe that the rich are already paying income taxes, then it's susceptible to this idea of like, oh, no, now you are soaking the rich. You're overburdening the rich.
It's class warfare we hear all the time.
Exactly. It makes it open to the class warfare argument. And so therefore,
the secret
I think
is there already is class warfare and we're losing.
Exactly. And so I think that what we need to do to clarify things is to actually move in the opposite direction and get rid of the estate tax, which is the additional tax that we have that is supposed to take care of taxing the rich. What happened is that since 1990, this tax has been kept on the books, but has been dug out from the inside. It has been completely eviscerated to the point where it no longer raises any revenue at all. So remember we talked about how the richest 1% pay $50 trillion. I'm sorry, the richest 1% own $50 trillion in assets. The amount of estate tax that was raised in 2024 was only $30 billion.
It sounds like a lot.
$30 billion sounds like a lot. It was actually an amount that Elon Musk both earned and lost in a single day. Because again, $1 trillion is so much more than $1 billion. So $50 trillion is just an absolutely mind-boggling number, and $30 billion is very small in relation to that. So I think the answer is that we have to clarify and bring everything into the income tax system so that when we talk about the income tax system, we know that we're talking about all sources of income, not just wages, but also investment, growth, and inheritances.
This idea of the estate tax becoming the death tax and how that has grown such huge, strong legs politically in currency with the conservative movement. I mean, like right now in Texas, we're having early voting for a constitutional amendments. One of them is Proposition 8, which would, it's a constitutional amendment to prohibit the legislature from imposing death taxes applicable to descendants' properties or the transfer of an estate, inheritance, legacy, succession, or gift. So it would ban death taxes in Texas. We don't even have them in Texas, but they're putting this in the Constitution anyway, just in case. So that's how, you know, they think about it here.
Absolutely. It was the anti-estate tax movement, which, by the way, was funded by 18 of the country's richest families, the Waltons, the Mars, the Kochs, they funded this effort in the early 1990s to get rid of the estate tax. And one of the first things they did was they hired this Frank Lutz, who was just a famous wordsmith, and he did some focus groups, and he realized that, like, people were very happy with an estate tax, but if you called it a death tax, then people wanted it repealed because it seemed like something that, like death, came for everyone.
Well, they told us that it would hurt family farms.
Exactly, and that it would hurt family farms and businesses. And actually, I was invited to testify in Congress when the Republicans were having hearings called the Impact of the Death Tax on Family Farms and Businesses. And needless to say, the focus of that was
But it actually doesn't because the numbers are so huge. Let me go to another caller. It's Roberto. Roberto, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, all these layers of complexity just, like, make things fail more easily, right? So I wasn't a registered voter. I wasn't even of age when Ross Perot was around. But I'm curious why there is still so much resistance to either a flat income tax or a consumption tax, like a federal sales tax on anything that is purchased. The people that I know and talk to that are politically active want these things. And I don't feel like we're really being represented anymore. So is there any chance of either of these things happening? Thank you.
All right, Roberto, thank you for that. So there are two big different things. Consumption tax is considered to be regressive. It would hurt working families more. But tell us about, Ray, about why a flat tax. What's that all about?
Right. So I agree that we need to simplify the tax code. But when candidates say the way to simplify it is to make it a flat tax rate so that everybody is subject to tax at the same rate, that misrepresents where the complexity lies. It's not hard to apply the rate tables. It's very simple to do. And it's based on an idea that somebody who earns $50,000 cannot pay taxes at the same rate as somebody who has $500,000, right? If you subject both to a 30% tax rate, that person who only earns $50,000, that's going to be a very burdensome tax for them. So the rate isn't what makes it complex. What makes it complex are the various exclusions. And I completely agree that we need to simplify it. And that's why I would bring investments and inheritances back into the income tax system and get rid of the estate tax.
Let's go to Jenny. And Jenny, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just want to say, like, everybody knows that the tax system is rigged. Everybody with half a brain knows that. I really think that the earlier caller had a point about the framing of this issue and how Bernie Sanders has. And I know that it's a great thing to know all the math about the tax code, but I really think you lose people getting too far into the weeds with it, and we need to focus more on lifestyle. As in, if you are saving up for your second yacht and I can't pay my car payment, there's a problem. I don't care if you're getting paid at 90, if you're getting taxed at 90%. If you are living a lifestyle that is that disproportionate to most of Americans, there's a problem. And I really think that people that are running for office, if they want to catch the attention of working class people the way that Trump did, they thought they were going to help them that are disaffected, they need to start focusing on lifestyle and pivot every single time the rich start saying, oh, the rich are already soaked. We'll soak them some more because they obviously still got too much of it.
All right. Well, Jenny, thank you for that. So, but you know, we're looking at the facts and we're seeing that the rich are not actually being soaked. And I think that's something that should be a fundamental understanding if you really want to know what's happening in the United States. But Ray, can you respond?
Well, yeah, I'd say I understand Jenny's frustration. It really is quite frustrating. But the problem is there's a lack of information, right? We don't see what the tax returns are of the people with their lavish lifestyles, right? We don't have Larry Ellison's tax return to look at, which wasn't always the case. There was a time when the very short-lived period when people's tax liability was published right in the newspapers, and you could see whether the rich people were paying taxes. But right now, the problem is that people who are leading these lavish lifestyles with the super yachts, you know, they are hiding behind the high income earners. They're hiding behind statistics like the top 1% are paying 40% of the taxes. So that's why we need to just delve a little bit into what the rules are so that we can see where the unfairness lay.
But the idea that coming after these ultra rich people for their lifestyle or the fact that they have so much money, we're told that we're socialist, that that's un-American.
Right. And I think one of the problems is, and this is one of the problems I think with the Sanders framing, is that or Elizabeth Warren, who I'm a big fan. I'm in Massachusetts. She's a great senator. But I think that when we focus on whether or not billionaires should exist or whether we should be having extra taxes on the wealthy, it sends a false message. It makes it sound like they're already paying regular taxes, and the question is whether we should tax them even more. Whereas what the real problem is that they're not subject to the most basic tax system that the rest of us are subject to.
All right, let's take a break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I've got some more callers. I'll get you on the air. Jeff and Bill, hang on. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Ray Madoff is with us. Her book is The Second Estate, How the Tax Code Made an American Aristocracy. I'm going to play another clip. This piggybacks off of what we were just talking about when we were saying about how people used to release their tax returns, or politicians used to release their tax returns, or we knew what these people were doing. Not anymore, especially with President Donald Trump. Some tax returns were eventually released about 5 years ago. Here's a news report from CNBC about that.
This report saying the president paid $750 in federal income taxes in 2016 and 2017, and he paid nothing for 10 of the previous 15 years. That's according to that report in the New York Times, which says it obtained the president's tax returns. Now, let's go first through the income side. Now, most of his income came from The Apprentice. That's $427 million since 2005. Now, along with $176 million from two office buildings that he co-owns with Vornado, and $20 million a year from the office and retail space at Trump Tower. So that's his large income side. Now, he plowed a lot of that cash into buying golf courses and the Washington Hotel, which, according to this report, have lost hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, Doral losing $162 million through 2018. And that Washington Hotel, which we hear so much about, losing $56 million. Those business losses, along with depreciation and tax credits from that hotel, allowed him to offset his taxes due, so he paid nothing for 4 years before 2015. Now, he received, as Becky mentioned earlier, a $73 million refund in 2010, which is now the subject of that IRS audit. Now, Alan Garten, he's a lawyer for the Trump Organization, said most, if not all, the facts in the Times story appear to be inaccurate. And he said that over the past decade, the president has paid hundreds of millions in personal taxes to the federal government and millions since 2015.
All right. So, Ray Madoff, what do you make of all that, that Donald Trump didn't pay taxes, according to that New York Times report, and he never released his tax returns, what he had promised to do, but he never did?
Right. So real estate developers are a little bit of their own breed. We have all sorts of rules in the tax code that particularly benefit real estate developers, and they allow them the capacity to, for example, write off the cost of a building as if it is losing value each year. They allow you to offset your income, even though the buildings, of course, are just as fine 10 years later as they were when you built them. So there's many favorable rules for real estate developers that Donald Trump has taken advantage of.
Why does he get to write off? So why do these business people, not just him, but it seems like they make it, being a bad businessman is profitable because you just write off the losses?
Yeah, well, it depends, as I say, on what particular types of businesses they are. Certainly the real estate business allows all sorts of write-offs. I don't think when you see the person who released Donald Trump's who there was an IRS worker by the name of Littlejohn, was his last name, Charles Littlejohn, who leaked the tax returns of both Donald Trump and of the richest Americans to ProPublica, and on which they filed this expose. And a lot of the other wealthy Americans simply didn't even have taxable income. So it wasn't necessarily that they were writing things off, but as much as that they had no taxable income anyway.
It's funny how we just kind of forgot about all that. Let's go to a caller. Let's go to Bill. Hey, Bill, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. You're right. There were some statewide propositions that related to tax, a bunch of them. They were confusing. And what was really surprising, although it was an income tax, the two propositions regarding Project Marble had in the headline at the top, this involves a tax. And we had been told there would be no new taxes. What do you think, Ms. Maddox, is the right way to do the messaging that can simplify these things and both encourage but explain the approach that needs to be taken? No Kings was touted as being an effective slogan because it said so much in a couple of words. What's the best messaging for getting at the tax problem with ordinary people like us who need to make these efforts?
All right, Bill, thank you.
No Kings, it's interesting you say that. I do think that was highly effective because, of course, the United States was founded against the idea of an aristocracy. And yet, I think that this idea is that the billionaires are essentially their own form of an American aristocracy, and we should be getting rid of that because the privilege of the aristocracy was that they don't pay taxes. And so we should have no kings and no other aristocracy here. I mean, we need some wordsmithing for that, but I think the public needs to understand that the wealthy Americans have largely been written out of the tax system, have been able to functionally secede to a tax-free version of American life.
And let's go to Jeff. And Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey, has any discussion been given about an intangibles tax? Florida State has an intangible tax, or at least had one. I don't know what they've got now after DeSantis. But, and along with a 1% value added or, consumption tax, I think could change the landscape without having to go after income where the income is hidden.
All right, Jeff, thank you for that. So Ray Madoff?
When you say taxing intangibles, are you talking about things like stock and things like that, the value of assets that people own, annual property taxes on people? I'm assuming that's what he's talking about.
Can we pot him back up? Jeff? Hang on. Yeah, Jeff. So what do you mean intangibles?
So, yeah, Florida had it for bonds and stock that were not, I guess, embraced by the IRAs or, you know, covered by IRAs.
Okay.
But stock that, and even private company stock that's been in
right.
families for years.
Okay. Right, Jeff, like got that. It. So let me get the answer here.
Yeah. So this is the issue about wealth taxes, and it's the proposal that's been put forth by Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I think the challenge with them, there's two challenges. One is the Supreme Court has really signaled that there is quite a good chance that they would find these types of taxes unconstitutional. As a so, there's one risk about that on the federal level. The states have different rules. But I'm concerned about a bigger problem, which is that if we impose an annual tax on the wealth of the richest Americans, right, every year they have to tally up all of their assets and report it, we are going to have massive tax avoidance. And with a completely underfunded IRS, there's going to be no capacity to monitor it. And that's because it'd be one thing if people owned just publicly traded stock. That's something that's easy to value it, right? The numbers are available. But a lot of these business interests are highly complex. They are partnerships owned by partnerships, owned by partnerships, owned by partnerships, right? And the layers of them are designed to hide wealth. And the IRS simply will not be able to keep up in valuation when we talk about the richest Americans.
And we have another caller. We have Robert. Roberts, go ahead.
Hi. To follow up on the question of intangibles, as you're noting, one of the problems is figuring out what the valuation of a stock is. Elon Musk is not worth $400 billion. That's a theoretical valuation. However, a lot of these billionaires are living by borrowing against that theoretical valuation. So what if we take that borrowing that's backed by securities, which is all well reported, and say that borrowing is income and tax that?
Roberts, thank you so much. That really gets to the heart of how they generate wealth by not having income, right?
Right. And that has been proposed by some people. The problem is that that on its own will be insufficient. If you think about somebody who has, you know, more than $100 billion, you know, they're not borrowing $80 billion, right? They might be borrowing $2 or $3 billion or maybe even $5 billion to support their lifestyle. And so if we just tax borrowing, that's not going to get at all of the gains that they have. So the problem is that we never tax these gains, right? If we think about somebody like Mark Zuckerberg. Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook. He had nothing. Now he has somewhere between $150 and $200 billion. And the question is he ever going to pay tax on this gain? And under our current rules, he doesn't pay tax unless he actually sells the property. If he gives it away to his kids or if he dies with it, he does not pay income tax on that gain. And the only tax that we have is the estate tax. But as we mentioned, the estate tax is just riddled with loopholes.
So we got to get to the fundamental point that this is putting a burden on working Americans. Can you just kind of sum that up in about a minute?
Sure. The problem is that no matter what size of government you want to have, what matters is how we fairly allocate the tax burden. And currently what we are doing is we are imposing significant burdens on working Americans and giving the richest Americans basically their own exit ramp where they can just choose to not pay taxes. And that's imposing costs on the country because it affects how much we have to borrow. And it's imposing a burden on all the rest of us who are paying more than we otherwise would if the wealthy were forced to contribute their fair share.
And is this fixable?
Yes, it is definitely fixable. It is fixable by basically bringing investment gains and inheritances right into our regular income tax system. And then we can really see and understand the system for what it is.
And create the political will to make that happen.
Absolutely.
Ray D. Madoff, the book is The Second Estate, How the Tax Code Made an American Aristocracy. Thank you so much for coming on the air today.
Thanks for having me. Wonderful to be here with everyone.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.